fact, I after dinner, or no, before dinner, I walked in and my son's 11, and I said, "Hey, Christian, I'm so excited. You know, I'm going to be on a podcast, my first time being a guest on a podcast tonight." He said, "I know, Dad, middle grade ninja. You talk about it all the time." I'm like, "Oh, I guess I have mentioned it before." So.
I think that should be the start of the show. I'm way too self-aggrandizing not to make it the start.
That's fine. Josh,
how are you this evening?
I'm doing great, Rob. Thank you for having me on your show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for making the time this evening. I'm excited to talk to you because you're getting it done, man. I saw you published your first book in 2018. Now you're up to 7 books at this point. Is that right?
Actually, 8. I have a young adult book as well, young adult paranormal urban fantasy. I'm at 8 books published, and my first book, The Timepiece, for the first in the middle grade fantasy series, that was published in November of 2018. So I've been trying to get the books out for sure.
So, I've got all kinds of questions for you about what you're doing with the books, what you're doing with YouTube, what you're coming at us on all fronts.
Yeah.
That I don't do other people's biographies. So the best place to start is if you would give esteemed audience kind of an overview of your background thus far, and then we'll dig in.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you. So I live in Nashville, Tennessee, the Nashville, Tennessee area. And I'm married. I have 2 kids. I'm a homeschool dad. My wife and I homeschool our kids. My son is 11. My daughter's 9. And a couple of years ago, our routine has always been to, read to our kids at night, like a lot of parents try to do. And it was my turn to put my son to bed. So we were going to read something. And he just was really burnt out on me reading to him. And he asked me, he said, "Dad, can we just make up a story together? Can you just tell me a story?" And I thought, yeah, sure, that'd be fun. And so we sat down and I just started telling him a story about a boy named Hoops who finds a magic timepiece. And every time he sets the hands of the pocket watch to a different hour, it takes him to a different fantasy world. And the first night I said, okay, so this is what happens in the 1 o'clock world. And I just made up a fantasy world. And half an hour later, his eyelids were getting droopy. And I said, okay, and that's all that happens in the 1 o'clock world. We'll do 2 o'clock tomorrow night. And he's like, "No, you got to do all 12 worlds tonight." I'm like, "It's 9:30. You should be asleep. We're not going to do that. Tomorrow night, we'll do it." Excuse me. So the next night, he's like, "Dad, you got to put me to bed tonight. I want to hear what happens in the 2 o'clock world." So we made up more. And he threw in some ideas. "Oh, wouldn't it be cool if this happened?" I said, "Sure, that can happen in the story." So night 2 was all about the 2 o'clock world. Night 3 was about the 3 o'clock world, so to speak. And we get about a week and a half into this, and he's so enthralled with this story and so interested to know what's going to happen in the next world that he decided to pass on an invitation from his grandmother to come over to her house and play video games. Because he doesn't play any video games here, but we allow him to do it over there. And so he said, "No, Mimi, I don't want to go over tonight. I want to hear what happens next in the story that Dad's telling me."
Well, hang on for an impressive purposes. At Mimi's house, is the video games, are we talking Atari, old school Nintendo? How good are we talking?
No, that's great. At the time, it was the Wii. Now it's the Nintendo Switch. But we're Nintendo fans, big time. And he was really into playing the Wii. And when he said, "I think I want to skip going to Mimi's and hear what's next in the story," my wife and I looked at each other like, that's a huge treat for him. She just, my mother-in-law lets our kids go hog wild. They can do whatever they want at Mimi's, as it should be with grandparents. When he said that, my wife said, "I don't know what you're telling him at night when you're putting to bed, but I think you need to turn it into a book. I think other kids might enjoy it too." I was like, I've never done that before. I don't really know if I could write, a story. She's like, you're a writer. I write things, but I've never written a fiction before, and I've certainly never published anything. She goes, "I think you really need to consider putting it, in book form and see what happens." And so I accepted the challenge, and it took about 8 months to get it written and figure out who's going to edit it and what should I do for a cover and illustrations and all those things. And then finally in November, I hit publish and on the ebook and the paperback, and was thrilled that other homeschool moms and other homeschool kids wanted to hear what it was all about and read it. And it really took off. And by the time I got done writing the first book, I realized I couldn't let the story just end there, because there's a little bit of a cliffhanger at the end. And so I was so excited about the whole process and really found that I loved writing fiction, especially for kids, that I said, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and try my hand at book two and three. So I plotted out book two and three, because I thought it'd probably be good to have at least three books in a series. That made sense. And now it's a 5-book series with 2 side stories and a prequel. And one of the side stories is in production right now. And it's been great. It's turned into it's just been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of fun. And I had no idea I loved writing so much. And fortunately, that's kind of what's carried me through getting, 7 books in the series online.
Okay, so we've established that this is a series that is good enough to give up a night with Meemaw to go hog wild, and the good Nintendo games, not the garbage Atari. No, this is the premium stuff that's being sacrificed for. So, had you wanted to be an author prior to this? Had it always kind of been in the back of your mind, or was it just, nope, I've having so much fun, let's do it now?
You know what? I never aspired to be a writer. I never aspired to be an author. I don't think ever in my life, even though my mom said, you're such a good writer. You're such a good writer. You should consider writing something. You should consider writing a book, writing a story. And I said, no, that's not for me. That's for like creative authors with ascots and pipes and, for people like, Dickens, who can like organize a whole story in their mind, and they just have the gift of dialogue. And I said, that's not really for me, but I appreciate the compliment.
What is this episode, 106, 107? Not one ascot or one pipe. What am I doing wrong, Nick? Sorry.
You just have all these, I just had all these images of what an author should be and is, and I didn't know anything, and I still don't know much. I just, but I really, when I started doing it, I realized how much I loved telling a story. And I think a lot of that comes out in writing dialogue. And the only thing I had to go with was, I read a lot, but I watch a lot of movies too. And I love how a chapter correlates with a scene in a movie, where there's a very definite opening to the scene, a very specific event or sequence of events, and it usually ends with some sort of a cliffhanger or a tag that makes you want to, figure out what the next scene's going to be all about. And it made sense that, chapters for a kid's book could be organized the same way. So long as they're, and it helps keep the chapters shorter too, I think. Some of the feedback from my son and some other homeschool kids was that the chapters were a little long and I should try to shorten them a little bit to keep their interest. And, that's straight from the horse's mouth. That's straight from the reader. And so I started doing that. I keep each chapter around about 1,000 words, maybe a little over, maybe a little under, but it's just manageable enough to keep their attention. That's just good advice from kids, coming straight from kids.
Well, I noticed the books are hitting right around, the paperbacks are hitting right around 115, 120 pages.
Yeah, they're all 5 books in the series are roughly around the 30,000 word mark. And then, except for the little prequel I wrote, which is the backstory of the bad guy, how he becomes the bad guy, and that's around 20. And then the 2 side stories, one of them is 25,000 words, and then the one I'm in the middle of writing right now is probably going to be it's probably going to be long. It's going to be around 40,000, maybe 45. I'm not sure, but I got to keep those chapters short. That's really important to keep. I think that's really important to keep kids' interests.
I did want to ask about plotting and about when you start to learn how to do writing, because I've been listening to you teach writing to kids through the Travelers League, which I want to talk more about your YouTube show, which everyone could be subscribing to right now while we're talking. It's the Travelers
League. That would be wonderful.
What's the YouTube landing page?
Sure. The YouTube landing page, the channel is called the Travelers League. Travelers League YouTube channel. And the writing tips for kids, there are four of those episodes out, and that's going to be a 10 video series. And the content has come from just what I've learned about writing and self-publishing.
Is this from since 2018 you've learned all this, or had you been kind of looking into it prior to that?
Really since 2018, when I started going down this whole journey of learning how to write and what readers expect and what makes a good story. And are you a, you know, plotter or a pantser, and how to organize a story and create characters, and all the things you learn in addition to that as you go, as you refine what you know and then apply it. So these are all of the best practices, if you will, that I've learned from the self-publishing community. And I went to I did go to a writer's conference that was here in Nashville year before last during the summer, because I just wanted to learn more of that. How can I become a better writer? A lot of it was geared towards more of the traditional published crowd. There are a lot of literary agents there, people pitching their books. But some of the workshops were about story structure and creating memorable characters. And I took a ton of notes and started applying that to the books I was writing. And so the writing tips for kids, this is, as an adult, what I've learned, the best practices I've learned about writing and publishing, but distilled for a kid to be able to grasp it and apply it. And the reason behind creating the video series actually is kind of an invention of my wife's. There's a big homeschool community here, and she thought it would be a cool idea to have some homeschool kids come over here to our house one day that are interested in becoming writers, writing books and creating stories, and to share with them, you know, all these things that I've learned. And I thought, oh yeah, that's a great idea. So what we decided to do was to take the things I'm going to tell them and create just a video for each topic and put it on YouTube so they have something to watch before they come over. And this is going to be in April, by the way. So we have 12 kids coming over. And the cool thing we're doing is that each child has read at least the first book in the series of the Travelers League series.
Okay, sure.
And there's a chapter in there about one of the worlds that the kid has to go through. And so the challenge was to the kids attending this get together, is that I wanted each one in 1,000 words or less to write a backstory about that world. It's a world where there's a group of humans and there's a group of what I call marsh trolls, and they're at war with each other. And I wanted the kids to come up with some ideas about how the world got that way. Did they live at peace? Have they always been at war? Have travelers always been coming through that world with a timepiece? Or like, well, what happened in the past? And so 12 kids, including my two, all sent their submissions. And what I did was I'm taking ideas, characters, events, just ideas from these kids, and I organized them into a storyline, a story structure. And I'm going to write a book using all their ideas. And then I'm going to publish it. And in the back of the book, I'm going to include each child's actual submission. So they'll all get writing credit, but the story is going to come from the collective ideas of these 12 kids. So they're going to recognize characters that they came up with or events that they came up with, and I'm going to publish it. And we're going to have all the proceeds go to a local charity here that I think supports literacy. My wife's picking the charity. There's a couple that we're looking at right now. But when they come over in April, the reason we're planning it so far out is because I want to be able to order author copies and give a copy to each child when they come over. So we can talk about writing. They can have a physical book they can hold in their hand. They can open it and see their characters and their ideas actually printed in a book. So we're doing that for our local homeschool group here. So, and that's why I created the videos, because I wanted them to watch those first before they came over, so they'd be ready for the conversations.
Look at you with the total life synchronization. You're getting the homeschooling done, but you've got the content for YouTube. You've got a new book coming out.
Yeah.
And everybody's getting credit, but there's your name. And it's just, my God, you're hitting so many What's the metaphor escapes me, but you're accomplishing a lot with just this one task. Is that pretty standard with homeschooling, that when you become interested in something, you're able to kind of, I mean, because you're teaching English, you're teaching creative writing. This is good stuff they're learning, and I'm assuming they're reading other books beyond the Travelers League, even, and you're talking about those and helping inform that. Yep. So have you been able to do that consistently throughout since 2018 to find different ways to work them in, or is this a relatively new phenomenon?
This is a new project. But when after the first book came out, I mean, within a couple of months, a homeschool family in Illinois, of all places, ended up buying the book and reading it. And the mom, a homeschool mom, reached out to me and said, "My daughters want to become writers. Would you be open to teaching them about writing? Like, what did you learn? How did you create a book? How do you write? How do you create stories?" And I thought, and I told her, I said, "I've only done this one time. You know, I can't be any newer to writing and publishing and, you know, authoring than I am right now, but I'll teach them what I've learned so far." And so we did that for about 3 months, 3 or 4 months. Every other week I would do a Skype call or a Zoom call with them. And, they would write us every time they'd write a story, and they would submit it to me before we would get together. And I would read it. I'd give them feedback. I'd tell them what I'd like. I'd tell them what I had learned. You know, like if I had written the story, what I would tweak or change or think about, or, you know, just based on what I had learned so far. And they really got a lot out of that. They really seemed to enjoy it. And that's a very normal thing in the homeschool community, where there's a lot of sharing. If someone starts developing a skill set, they don't have to be a master, but if they have a skill set they're developing and they're willing to share that, you know, that education that they've gotten for themselves, if they could share that with others, you know, they do that. They organize that. So I'm happy to do it. And I'm just thrilled kids are interesting. And I think more than anything else, I love, besides the actual writing, I love it when kids walk up to me and said, "I read your book, and I want to be a writer when I grow up. Can I ask you some questions about writing?" I'm like, "Oh my gosh, yes, absolutely." I just think it's wonderful to just inspire the creativity in kids to actually think, you know, I can do this myself. You know, what I love about kids is that they're not adults. what I mean by that is that, like, adults, like with me, when I was, you know, presented with the challenge of writing a book, there's just a lot of inhibition, a lot of reasons why I can't do it or maybe shouldn't do it, and sensitive to the criticism or the potential feedback, you know, just a lot of second guessing myself. Kids don't have that for the most part. They haven't been knocked down so many times that they have those inhibitions. So when I was a kid, you know, 6, 7 years old, I thought if I just believed hard enough, I could actually fly. Like, you know, I just thought that I could do anything. And so
did you test this theory?
I didn't. I don't know how I'm alive. I don't know how I didn't climb up on the roof and jump off and break my neck. But
readers everywhere appreciate that you didn't.
I don't. Well, I certainly wouldn't have the joy of, you know, my two kids right now, for sure. But kids don't, they believe they can do it. There's not a lot out there telling them they can't. And so when they're inspired to do, kids are underrated too. I mean, they're understanding, they can understand concepts, I think, on a deeper level than what we really give them credit for. And so I want to write to that. I want to write in a way that doesn't, you know, talk down to them or narrate down to them. I really want, you know, to write it in somewhat adult language, maybe a challenging word here and there. You know, I think they understand emotion, they understand stories, and I think that they just deserve more credit. So when a kid says, "I want to be a writer," they truly believe they can do it. And so I want to tell them everything I can. I want to encourage them and tell them everything that I've learned, because I want to see them go. I want to see them do it, you know, and to think about that, it'd be really neat to be, you know, a teenager and you've already written a book, you've already self-published it, and you're going into high school, you're going into college, and you've already accomplished this thing that in adults' minds is just such an it almost seems like an overbearing accomplishment for people who want to write. I've talked to several people that like, oh, I've always thought about writing a book, but I just didn't, you know, I just never sat down and did it, or I just couldn't figure it out, or I didn't want to figure it out, or I didn't want to submit it. They just never got around to it because all these inhibitions, and just kids don't have that. So.
But I also don't necessarily have the sole motive of I want to be famous. I want this to become my overall living that's going to sustain sure. me and my family forever and our golden palace. Just the joy of I've got a great story and I'm sharing it and people like it is enough for lots of kids. There's always one.
Yeah, for, absolutely.
For lots of children.
And I wish I had started so much earlier. I went, you know, I was 40 years old in 2018. When I wrote my first middle grade book. And man, I wish I had started 20 years earlier. I wish I had discovered my love for writing fiction way back then. But it is what it is. Now I'm 40 years old and I have to, you know, face the reality that I really love this. And there's still time, hopefully, to turn this into something that could sustain my family, potentially in the future. That's the dream, right? To do this full time. So, I'm working towards that, but in the meantime, I'm just trying to write stories that I love writing and that people will enjoy, particularly that middle grade age range.
Barbara Shoup, check the back catalog, esteemed audience. She was the second or third guest, and then she came back to discuss her book on writing. But she said that she tells people that want to write that are no longer in their 20s that it's too late to be that young writer you might have been. But it's never too late to be a writer and to be the writer you want to be now.
That's awesome. That's
awesome. So, okay. I want to back up and I want to talk about, break down your process for how you're getting the books out, how you're doing it so quickly with everything else you've got going on. But it seems to me the place to start is with time management.
Yeah,
when
sure.
You had originally reached out to me. I know you had mentioned your day job, COVID, 19 times, everything changes, but you're still working a day job, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah. I work full time. I work for a company that helps start nonprofits. I'm one of their salespeople, and that's an 8-to-5 Monday through Friday gig. And then of course, in the evenings it's family time, it's dinner and dishes and, talking about what kids learned in school and putting them to bed and going through that whole routine. So weekends are pretty key. They can get filled up with other plans and it can be hard to get writing done. And so for any consistency, I have to get up before my workday starts. Fortunately, right now I can work from home, so I don't have a commute. So that saves me a little time. But as it is right now, and really I've been doing this since, 2018 when I figured out this is the only way to get it done. You got to get up 4:30. And give myself, that first 2 or 3 hours to, first of all, wake up, but to really put words on put words on paper, so to speak. And so everything I've been able to do, I've been able to do it before my workday. And then on the weekends, when I get a extra time, I can fill in the gaps or maybe do some administrative things or, toy with, the Facebook page. Or the weekends are when we make our videos and put them on YouTube. So those are real key times, but for the writing itself, the most important work, that I can only do it in the morning. And of course, you get up at 4, when 8 o'clock rolls around, I'm done. I feel like I'm an old man, going to bed at 8 o'clock. I'm going to go up, put my pajamas and robe on and roll into bed. But yeah, that's the only time I can do it. And there have been a lot of mornings where I got out of bed and I sat down at the computer and didn't get any writing done. Got distracted by Facebook or stared at a blank page and just couldn't get my mind going at all. That happens, but the habit is there of getting up early, first thing, going downstairs, make a cup of coffee, sit down in front of the computer, and just try to start moving your fingers. And just have to do it consistently. And you got to take a break. I feel like I do. I can't do it 7 days a week nonstop. I have to give myself at least one or two mornings where I can sleep in a little bit and get caught up.
You keep those consistent, or is it just this is the day this week because of whatever happened the day before?
As far as the, you mean the getting caught up on sleep?
Yeah, like is it every, I write Monday, Wednesday, Friday, yeah. Thursday, and Tuesday, never mind. Or is
usually Sunday morning.
Straight. Okay.
Yeah, and even if I don't set my alarm now, it's I'm in a place where I'm naturally waking up around 5:30 or 6, so I'm not pushing myself too hard. I noticed early on, too, that when I was getting up early but not able to write anything because I was so tired, I realized it's because I wasn't, like, getting the kids in bed early enough and then me going to bed, because it's easy to stay up and try to get a lot of other things done. Some people need more sleep than others. Apparently, I need quite a bit. So when I get the kids down, I have to go straight to bed. I have to go straight to sleep in order to get everything done. That was really hard to learn. That was really hard, like going to bed 8:30, 9. That's super early for most people. But I also have, you know, 3.5-4 hours of writing in the morning before my workday starts. So that's where that's the silver lining.
Well, that's one nice thing about quarantine is that it's important I find to count your blessings when going through challenging times. But with everybody working from home, everybody kind of free to set their own schedule. Yeah. If you're not doing something, it's not because you're being made not to, so as far as going to bed at the time you want and how you're doing your day. Same I'm finding with things that I eat. Like, it's all good and well to make the argument that, hey, I'm going to have, you know, the McDonald's breakfast this morning because there's just not enough time to make breakfast at home. But yeah, during quarantine, not this time. You're at home. Is there healthy stuff in the fridge? Why isn't there healthy stuff? That's where all the food is. Buy healthy things in this. It's a nice way to change priorities.
I can't say how many times I've, like, on a lunch break, I'm working from home. I get a lunch break, a lunch hour. And, you know, oftentimes my wife will make lunch for her and the kids, and she'll make me something too, which is so wonderful. I'm so grateful for that. But a lot of times, you know, they're out or doing something during the lunch hour. So I'll throw my coat on, walk right past that fridge full of healthy food and get in my car and, you know.
Oh, sure. That's tough.
And I always give myself the excuse, no, I need to get out of the house. You know, I just need to get out of the house.
No. The importance of the fresh air and the socialization with the drive-through, so crucial.
That's right. And you know, I speaking of COVID, I had COVID. I got COVID in early January, and had symptoms for, you know, just over 2 weeks. I actually, last week was my first week back to work, and zero writing got done. Like 3 weeks of like nothing.
I think that's an ironclad excuse.
Well, I think so. I'm glad you concur, because I did feel a little guilty that I just didn't get anything done, but I was wiped out. I didn't have energy, and I needed to sleep as much as I could, which I did.
I'm sure an author like, oh, Maurice Broaddus, who might be listening, would say, no, if I got COVID, I would find a way to keep going, and you know what? He probably would.
Yeah. I'm sure. I figured at some point, you know, most people are going to catch it. And a lot of people don't have severe symptoms. They get pretty mild symptoms. But all four of us caught it. My daughter had symptoms for a day. My wife had symptoms for about 2 days. And I had it for 2 weeks. And their symptoms were super mild. And mine were agony. It was awful. It was awful. I got the full measure. My son, nothing. He no symptoms whatsoever. But I got it, and I don't want to sound like a complainer, but it was like, I don't ever remember feeling that sick. I don't ever remember feeling that sick, but
just got bedridden. It. I mean, as much as you're comfortable sharing, this isn't the Let's Talk About Your Diseases show with Rob, but
sure.
it's on everybody's mind.
Yeah.
If you could give us kind of your quick rundown of your experience, what kind of symptoms were you having?
Yeah, you know, so it was on a Saturday night. I started feeling, you know, achy and like fatigued, and I felt, you know, how it feels when you know like a flu's coming on or a cold is coming on. You start like, oh man, I think I'm going to need to take tomorrow off or rest tomorrow. I think I'm, you know, coming down with something. So I started feeling that. The next day, which was a Sunday, I felt like I had the flu. And the following day was a Monday, and I worked. Even though I didn't feel great, I felt like I had rested a lot. I'd gotten some of my energy back, so I tried to work. And just thought, you know, I just have a bug. My wife had it a couple days ago. My daughter had it. I just thought maybe it was a 24-hour thing going through our family. But Monday afternoon, I lost my sense of taste and smell. And I've never had a flu that did that. And I know that's one of the hallmark symptoms of COVID. So I, you know, told my wife, I think I need to get tested. And anyone who's come over today to our house to visit or do homeschool stuff, you might want to tell them that I probably have COVID. So I went and took a couple days off work, went and got tested. Sure enough, I had it. And the symptoms got more severe, you know, the fever and the aching and the fatigue. And, you know, I didn't have a lot of, you know, stomach issues, thankfully. Don't want to be, you know, don't want to be crude on your show. I won't go into detail. But I had
someday I'll do the young adult ninja, and then we can really get into the great details. But
we'll take it to PG-13. One of the really crazy, the worst symptom for me was this eye soreness, where it felt like you had a bad migraine, and it felt like there was something clawing into the back of your eyes. They were just throbbing. They felt like there was a lot of pressure, like they were sensitive to the touch. And it was like a 36-hour stint where that was the most painful of all the symptoms, if you will, the most the hardest to deal with. And, you know, aspirin and all the stuff that you take to relieve those types of aches and pains, nothing worked. So I didn't sleep for 36 hours. It was really awful. That went away. But the flu and the fever didn't. That lasted, you know, like 10 days, really. And that finally died down, thankfully. And then you kind of go into that second phase, which is the respiratory phase. You know, towards the end of, you know, any coronavirus, you the last part of it is where you're coughing up a bunch of junk. Your throat gets clogged up, or your sinuses get clogged up, and you have to, you know, expel all that. And that's the dangerous part, because that's where a lot of people end up catching pneumonia. The COVID-19 causes the you know, filling of their lungs with fluid, and that's where people die. That's what causes most deaths from COVID. And it affects everyone so differently. You know, young, healthy 30-year-olds that run marathons would die from COVID because of that second phase. And then, you know, other people in my family who are not marathon runners by any stretch and much older than me just would breeze through that phase. And you just never know how it's going to affect someone. So I was kind of worried about what might happen, since none of my, the rest of my family had any symptoms, but I did. And so I was kind of bracing for impact, but thank the Lord, nothing. I just breezed through it and felt great. Took a few more days off work, rested, and I came back swinging last week, you know, with not just work, but, you know, the writing. And I think we're gearing up either this weekend or next to make the next Kid Ventures video and Writing Tips for Kids video. So I'm back on the horse. But, man, I'll tell you, it ruined my January schedule. I had it all mapped out. You know, I'm going to write. Every day I'm going to write this, I'm going to do this marketing, I'm going to plot out this, we're going to do this video on Saturday. I just had every single day of the month, I had it organized and ready to go, and COVID robbed me of like 3 weeks of all of that, so I've got to.
So the headline is, man survived COVID, complains about disrupted schedule.
It was very inconvenient, Rob, I'll be honest.
No, it sounds it.
Well, it's the new year. It's like 2020 was awful, and I was bound to determine 2021. I don't care, COVID, politics. I'm not going to look at any of that. I'm going to do whatever I can control. I'm going to have a good year no matter what. I'm going to do everything I can to stay positive, write more books, you know, and just do the best I can. And I'm determined to have a great year. And then January rolls around, and I'm just not. Knocked on my butt, and all my plans are just tossed out the window. So my year is officially starting this month, February, with this podcast and being a guest. This is officially the start of my 2021.
Well, this is where it's at. I called January 21st the new year this year. That's okay. Whew, calm down a little bit. Let's get going.
Yeah.
It reminds me a little bit of a Far Side cartoon, just that story, man makes plans, God laughs. There was a Far Side cartoon where if you want to wash your car, or if you want to make it rain, rather do a dance and you just get near your car and yell, "I just washed my car," and then the rain will immediately pour.
Exactly.
That's you setting up all of your plans in January, ready to go.
Yep. I was tempting the fates and shouldn't have done that. Shouldn't have done that. See, I should have gone into 2021 as a pantser and not a
Oh, sure.
plotter, So.
Well, 3 weeks is 3 weeks. But you're back. You're on this show. That's a good start.
Yes,
It's
sir.
gonna be all nothing but great beer from here on, I assume, because why not? If we're wrong, it won't feel better to have been right. So let's assume it's great.
That's right. That's right. I'm planning for good things. I'm planning for good things, and I'll do everything I can to make that happen. But the things outside of my control, they're just it's nothing. It's like anything else. You just have to take it as it comes, learn from it, and start over.
I don't think you could definitively say how to make sure no disruptions ever come and everything goes exactly according to plan forever. We could sell amazing retirement plans because we would know exactly how long everyone was going to live, how much money they needed. It would no problem. But two, this would be the most listened to podcast of all time. We'd be geniuses.
Absolutely.
Which we
Absolutely.
are, but we're not gods. Just
Speak for yourself.
well, fair enough. Well, now that you're back at Mount Olympus, you've got the 2021 under your thumb. Everything's going to be wrangled back. Going back to your morning sessions, and you're back at starting at 5:30 maybe to warm up, and then eventually you're going to be back to 4:30. What does a successful day look like? We talked about, you stare at Facebook, you stare at the page. That happens. But a successful day, how do you go about the rest of your day feeling like, yes, I did it this morning. What a session.
And that's such a great feeling when you feel like your writing output has met your own personal standard, and everyone's can be different. But honestly, and this is not a very high bar, but if I can type 1,000 words, if I can type 1,000 words, which is one chapter usually of any of the middle grade books that I'm writing, if I can write one chapter, man, I'm on cloud nine for the rest of the day. I've got that. I'm like a dog that's been cooped up in the house all week and just went for like a 3 mile run. How they're just that happy, they're empty, like that happy, just exhausted. And I carry that through the day, and I just feel like, yeah, I did it. I fulfilled what I'm supposed to do to, call myself a serious writer. It feels really good. Yeah, I'd say 1,000 words. If I can get 1,000 words down, I'm good to go.
So 1,000 words on average for your 30,000 word book. Are you pretty good about a couple of months? So what's your time frame?
Usually I can, if I don't get sick, I can get a first draft out in a month. I usually get a first draft out in a month if I'm, for whatever reason, really fired up, and I'm like finding every little moment I can during a weekend. Maybe a little quicker than that if I'm really excited about a project. But that's pretty normal. Like last year, was it last year? It was last year. I started the year by writing. Well, I finished book five in the series in January, but in February, that's when I wrote the young adult. That paranormal urban fantasy, and it was a passion project. It was just an idea I had for a character and a set of circumstances, and I just wanted to try my hand at young adult. And it hasn't done much, but writing it was so fulfilling. And it's just over 60,000 words, and it took me 2 months. And then I sent it to the editor, and a couple months later, we were able to get it published. That's pretty normal. 1,000 words a day, I can get a book done, well, written in a month. And while I'm working on that book, I'm typically, when I have in the margin time, the non-writing time, I'm working on, you know, reviewing the edits from the editor, or reviewing covers, or maybe listening to the audiobook chapters that the narrator is reading. So there's always other stuff to do on other books that are farther into the process. But I usually the first 2 or 3 days of the month is just plotting out the next story. And if I'm going to plot it, which most of the books I do, and then I jump into the writing, and usually within a month it's written. But you have to manage, you might have 2 or 3 books that need attention of some kind at any given time. One's in the writing phase, one's in the, you know, editing, formatting phase where you're getting it ready to publish. And then, you know, the other one's published, but maybe you need to run ads, or you've submitted it to, you know, a narrator and you're working on the audiobook. And then there's like the email list. And I hate marketing so much because I'm not good at it. And trying to manage an email list and all that, that's all the stuff that moves the needle probably more than anything else. But it's the stuff that, you know, I struggle with, to be honest. Trying to keep up with all of that. That pressure, I think, can distract me from writing sometimes in the morning too, because I'll sit down and I know I need to write. But gosh, I really need to send out this email, or man, I should have posted this on, you know, Facebook, or I should really listen to that that ACX audition for the audiobook. And you know, I can get distracted by those things that matter, but they don't matter as much as the one thing that matters the most, and that's actually writing.
So we just get time turners like Hermione and Harry Potter, and then we can get everything worked into our day. So are you? I mean, 8:30. You're in bed. I believe you. But I mean, is there no time other than that morning where you're doing all this? You know, the ACX, the YouTube, the everything else that you've got going on.
Yeah, I'm really, really on the weekends, because I'll still get up early on Saturday, usually. And you know, my kids sleep in on the weekends. My wife sleeps in on the weekends. So I'll get the normal, you know, 3.5-4 hours in the morning. But then there's always some extra time too. And so on the weekends, I typically don't write. On the weekends, I'm typically doing all that other stuff, all the other stuff, sending something out to the email list, or preparing to record a video with my kids, or, you know, posting the necessary, oblations on Facebook and Instagram, just trying to keep up with all of that. So there is time there, but it's not something I do on a daily basis, or at least I don't plan to. I try to chunk all of that into just one big session where I can knock it all out at once, maybe 3 or 4 hours, and then just be done with it for the week. And the challenge with that is just not letting that distract me, you know, during the actual work week when I should be writing in the, you know, in the early morning.
Gotcha. That sounds like an incredibly demanding schedule, and I can see you're pulling it off. So you must enjoy most of what you're up to. I mean, it must feel good, even the parts that don't feel good. You must have some kind of positive attitude in your approach to that, or you wouldn't get through it. And I know that, you know, there's always one thing that's not happening. My mailing list is also behind. I don't even know why I have an Instagram account.
I don't either. I don't either. I'll be honest. I think having a YouTube channel and actually putting something out there that will add value to people, I think over the long haul, that'll bring some attention to the books, you know, have a good reach. I think the email list is really, really effective. For me, for some reason, Facebook and Instagram, I just don't feel like they, I mean, I have my personal profiles, but I also have, you know, pages. I have a Facebook page for the Travelers League, and I have an account just for the Travelers League on Instagram. And I try not to make it all about my books. I try to, you know, post things that would interest people, not by my book. So I try to do that, but I just don't see it moving the needle a lot. Like I don't see how it's translating into any book sales. You know, most of my book sales come from Amazon ads, or, you know, selling directly to, you know, moms or kids in the area. I've been considering the nuclear option with Facebook, you know. I haven't fully decided yet. I'm still, I don't know.
Nuclear option, meaning delete.
Just delete. Yeah, like, just take it down. Just take it down. I haven't decided on that officially. I kind of need to be talked off the ledge a little bit. I don't know if I'm going to, you know, I don't know if I'm going to jump or if I'm going to step back. I haven't really decided, but I've been considering it because it just seems like a lot of wheel spinning with very little measurable result. It doesn't seem like it's doing anything. Now, when my wife posts something about my books, because she's so plugged into the community, that, you know, that has some effect. That has effect. I might sell some things or, you know, get some interest. But when I do it, it doesn't seem to do anything. I don't know. So it just seems like a lot to keep up with if it's not producing any results. So I don't know. I'm open to any suggestions you might have. I don't know.
No, you're here to teach me. That's the whole point of the show is I have smart people on here that tell me all their secrets. And then eventually I will put everything to use, and then
I will say this. The thing, I think more than anything else that's keeping me from just hitting the giant delete button on Facebook is that, you know, Facebook ads can be really effective for building your email list if you build a decent ad, you know, and target it. And I'm sure Facebook ads are good for a lot of other things too, probably book sales or, just, you know, getting attention on your book or your brand or whatever. Those work. Those really work. And I would hate to not have access to that. But it was running. I only ran one right during the lockdown. So I timed it really well when people were just stuck at home with nothing to do. That's when I started building my email list. And it helped a lot. It helped a lot. I don't have a lot of subscribers. I only have about right now just over 500 subscribers. But that's a good start. That's a good start. And about 2/3 of that came from the Facebook ad and some free promos I was running, giving away book one, in exchange for someone's email. And that's maintained. So I'd hate to give that up, but is it worth all the other stuff you have to put up with on Facebook? I don't know.
Other stuff being your uncle's thoughts on politics, your future high school, all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. And, you know, I'm not engaging in any of that, of course, but just the, just being spied on and having ads thrown up, like really creepy ones that, you know, they could not have known about unless they were listening, you know, it's just a constant solicitation for me to consume something all the time on Facebook. And that's really draining. My wife posts pictures of, you know, us together or what the kids are doing, the homeschool stuff. And I love that. I love seeing all that. I love having the history of the photos and videos to document all the great memories. But, you know, all the other stuff that ends up in my feed is just, it just seems like trash, you know. You know, a lot of it. Too many memes, too many ads, too many notifications for things that I shouldn't be getting notifications for. And, I don't know. It's just very distracting.
I've taken it off my phone, and I try to limit the amount of times per day I'll go on there. Usually I check it once in the morning and once in the evening. Even that's too much. It's enough time to potentially ruin my day. But I will see a measurable effect that if I post, you know, there's a new episode of the podcast on Facebook, yeah, I will see traffic come over from that, which is the thing that keeps me from going nuclear. I don't like being spied on.
That's it. Awesome. That is so, and you know, a lot of it, as sick of it as I sometimes get, you know, I don't want to presume that I know everything about Facebook or how to use it effectively. I mean, a lot of my frustration could be coming from me just not really fully understanding it and grasping it. If I'm not doing enough, if my only problem, I can do more. Not sure I can commit to more. So, but that's, I don't know. But there's a lot to learn. I certainly don't know anything. I certainly don't know everything about any of the platforms. So it's, if I can learn how to do it right, and it does move the needle. No, I won't. I won't nuke it.
Twitter's the one that gets under my skin a little bit, because it's just not enough space to express myself the way I write blog posts that are 2,000-3,000 words sometimes. If I want to say a thing, hear me out. Let me say the whole thing. I'm not good with the little tweet, like, oh, you just heard the one thing that I didn't want you to hear, and that's not so hot. Anyway, but I noticed that there are some authors that are so frequently on Twitter and sharing so many aspects of their life on Twitter that I wonder, how are you finding time to write? And when I have that thought, I'm reminded of myself as a child in Sunday school class complaining that so-and-so had their eyes open during prayer. The reason I know they're on Twitter so much is I'm on Twitter reading what they're tweeting about. Book on my phone, which is just my plan for a solution. Because if every time I pull that thing out to kill a couple of minutes, instead of just reading benign, tweets about whatever, just read a section of a book. My for pleasure reading every year would grow exponentially, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. That's another thing that's really important. I mean, to me, I'm not saying to writers in general, but man, the morning is definitely writing time. When can I read something, because I want to fill the tank, and for me, sometimes on a lunch break, if the family's not here, I might read on lunch break, or maybe just read as I'm falling asleep. It's a great way to fall asleep. I always know when it's time to turn the light out when I've reread the same chapter four times, or the same paragraph four times, rather. That's a good indication. But I don't reading to fall asleep, or reading and before you go to bed, is a good way to forget everything you just read. And so finding time to just read something enjoyable is really, really challenging. And I think too, a lot of this too, for me, is just the season of life with, having kids that are 11 and 9 and just a lot of activity, which is great, but just, it's a lot of go, 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 which is wonderful, but it doesn't leave a lot of margin to do those other things, so the only time I could squeeze in more reading is just to stay up late, but that might wreck my mornings, or to find just little pockets of time, maybe when the kids go over to Mimi's house, right? So that might be a time where I could get some pleasure reading in. So I just have to find that time where I can get it. But I don't think anything's more important than the first couple of hours of the day, where I know why I'm getting up early and I got to at least get that done. I think that's what's most important. And sometimes it's the hardest thing to do, because there's so many other things you can do. And I have an old typewriter that I play around with, and it'd be fun to write a book on a typewriter, but obviously getting into digital format would be I'm sure it'd be a nightmare. But the reason I like it is because there's no connection to a world of distractions. There are no apps. There are no notifications. There are no sounds other than the clicking of the keys. And if I write something just for pleasure on a typewriter, I can typically get a lot of it written, and I can do it undistracted, which is a really neat experience. I just can't use any of it. I guess I just can't use anything.
Well, and that's how you've retyped it anyway.
Right. Yeah, I could. Or just take a picture of it and just post the picture. Hey, everybody, look what I wrote.
I know there are apps. I can't think of the name of one offhand, because this is do as I say, not as I do type of thing, because I don't do that. If I get a Facebook notification, hold on, writing, let me see what I got here. No, I'm pretty good, honestly, about shutting down my browsers for the time that I actually need to get my word count in. But I know that there are apps that you can just turn off the internet completely. I don't know if that would be helpful to you.
It would be very helpful. So I write in Google Docs, and I know you can go into an offline mode, but I don't know if that would work. I don't know if that saves what I do in an offline. I don't know if have you ever played around with that at all, or?
Not with Google Docs, because I only use that for freelance jobs. And for that, I don't mind taking a break to, sometimes it's very necessary to take a break to check the news, check Twitter, whatever.
Sure. When you're writing, what platform do you write in?
Just Microsoft Word. It's getting to be an old, I've got a 2007, 2008 edition, because I don't
Okay.
want to pay their yearly charge to continue to upgrade.
Yeah.
And I'm running out of, the clock's about out on that. I'm going to have to bite the bullet and switch to a new platform or just give Microsoft their money.
Okay.
I think I've ridden this thing about till the wheels came off.
That's great. So you've always used that one thing, and I've always just used Google Docs, and lately, last couple of books, I've been using Kindle Create to create the ebook, but they also added the feature, I think last year or year before last, where you can use that same file and they'll automatically format it as paperback as well, which was really helpful because up to that point I was having to create an ebook, a document for to create the ebook, but also put everything into Word for the paperback and format it. That was really challenging. That was like one of my least favorite experiences in the publishing process, was trying to figure out how to get the paperback published. And I can see why people charge or offer that service for a fee. It's a very valuable thing. And there was a point where I was thinking, you know, I pay someone to edit. I pay someone to edit my manuscript. I pay someone to design the cover. This formatting stuff is worth paying someone to do. But I kept getting this feedback from the self-publishing community. It's like, no, that is one thing you should just learn to do on your own. And so I just bit the bullet and tried to figure it out, and got it figured out. Just it took some learning, but got it figured out. But it's not an enjoyable experience for me. And so Kindle Create came along and solve that problem for me. So I pretty much just do everything in that now.
I know it's immediately divisive for some of the audience if I say anything in praise of Amazon. We're recording this just as Jeff Bezos has stepped down, so maybe that softens the blow a little bit. But they have been amazingly innovative. They've got stuff that every year they're coming. It's like they're ahead of the video game companies. They are every year's KDP is better than the last. Just constant innovation, new tools to help you out, and so what are some of the best tools you've been able to use that have helped boost your books?
Well, Google Docs to write them in. I use Kindle Create for the formatting. I export that and then convert it into the different formats for ebook in Caliber, which is a open source. And then of course everything's through KDP. All of my books are through KDP on Amazon. So and I understand why people don't like the exclusive approach that Amazon tries to get you to take with your books, and I get that. Some of my books are exclusive, but I also see the value in other platforms like Ingram. I'm going to try my hand at getting a hardcover edition printed soon, and I also, I see the value in going traditional at some point, or at least trying to go through a traditional publisher as well. I haven't quite gotten there yet, but the great thing about starting as a self-published author is that you can, you can cut your teeth, so to speak, on learning how to write and become a better writer and build a following, so that if you do get a traditional publishing deal, you already have a following. You can create a great story that they're going to accept, and that's a good, it's a good runway, I think, to building up to that. So I'm open to that. I'm hope to pursue that in the future. But other than that, other than KDP and Caliber and Kindle Create, those are the main tools for the publishing. I run Amazon ads, and I think that generates probably the majority of my of the royalties every month. Learning how, and that was really fun. Learning how to run Amazon ads, and the best person that I listened to help learn that was Dave Chesson, the Kindlepreneur, and he had a free like video series on how to create Amazon ads, step by step by step. It was really, really helpful. really helpful. I really want to pay money for Mark Dawson's course to run ads. Mm-hmm. Not ready to cough up the coin. It is a little pricey, but I'm totally convinced it's worth it. So I look forward to that. But I know a lot, and that's another thing, going back to Facebook and do I nuke it or not? If I get in that course and he can convince me that it's 100% worth it to run Facebook ads, I won't nuke Facebook. You know, I'll keep it around. So, like I said, I'm not ready to jump off the cliff yet. I think there's a lot of things to consider, and I've always wanted to take his course. So I plan on doing that this year.
Yeah, Facebook's kind of like the, you got to figure out how much poison you're willing to ingest for the amount of nutrition you're getting.
That's perfectly said. That's exactly right.
Try to say at least one clever thing per episode, so that's, pressure's off.
Well, you're nailing it, man. You said several.
So, okay. With Amazon ads, having not taken Mark Dawson's course yet, which, of course, everyone listening should immediately go and subscribe to, check out, I think, Brian Cohen's. Probably got some great stuff as well from the self-publishing podcast. Don't listen to the podcast. Listen to this podcast, but you can take the course. No, the self-publishing
That's
great.
Right.
What, for folks that aren't ready to also to cough up that coin for Mark Dawson, what kind of tips can you give for free? What have you had success with the ad so far?
Well, you know, the right keywords are really important. I think finding the right keywords is really important. And the best way to do that is to know what genre your book's in and search on Amazon and find the top selling, the number one book in your genre, and start there. And your keywords should be the author name, the series name, the title of the book, and the title of all the other books in the series. And then go to the second one, go to number two in your series, and just collect names, names of series, titles of books, and you know, maybe loosely what they're about, and just start building a list. And when you get, you know, 600, 700, 800 keywords, that's normally enough to run, I think, an effective ad for your book. And I would also say the other equally important, if not most important, part of running an ad is copy, like your ad copy, because you have a limited amount of space to write, you know, a very brief little blurb about why someone should click on your thumbnail, click on that ad, you know, click on your book and go to your sales page. And learning how to write good ad copy is, I think, absolutely crucial. And I'm not saying I'm good at it. I'm probably barely mediocre. But I think the best voice out there would be, what's his name? Brian, I haven't looked at it in so long. Who did I listen to? I listened to several people. I can't remember his name. It'll come to me. I'm getting tired. I've crossed that 8:30 threshold.
That's true. Brian, we should probably think about wrapping it up, even though I'm having a wonderful time.
Yeah, no, that's okay. I think the best voice out there for learning how to write ad copy is Brian Meeks. I couldn't remember his last name. But the way he writes his sales copy and ad copy is just genius. And his logic behind how he constructs that ad copy is just, it's awesome. I think he helped me more than anyone else in learning how to, you know, figure out how to very succinctly tell people, maybe not what the book's about, but give them a really strong hook that makes them interested enough to click on it and go to your sales page. So I think, and Brian Meeks, he has a couple, he's got several books out, but he has a couple books on just writing ad copy for your books. So I can't remember the title. It's been a while since I read it, but it was really good.
So I've got a million questions for you, but I'm going to try and be real selective so we can think about landing this thing.
Sure.
And call it, because I know you got a 4:30 wake-up call.
I
don't want to keep you up too late.
You better try.
So audience knows I have to ask, have you ever seen a flying saucer and or a ghost?
Ooh, I love that question. I have not seen a flying saucer. I've not seen a ghost, but I did have a bizarre experience while I was reading in bed one time, where this sounds so woo-woo. But I felt like I was getting ready to, go to bed and put the book down. And I didn't turn the light off quite yet. And I heard a whisper in my ear, and I felt the breath, the air, as the whisper was, as whatever it was whispering to me. And thought it was my wife playing a joke, but she was sound asleep. She was sound asleep. I turned over and I said, "What did you say?" And I had to rouse her. Plus, her back was to me, so there's no way she could have done that, moved and pretended to be asleep, and it would have been obvious. No, she was sound asleep. And it was just this really bizarre experience where there was this whisper in my ear, and not just hearing it, but feeling the air on my ear was really crazy. And I think that's probably the only supernatural or paranormal thing that I've ever experienced. So I didn't see anything, but that was weird.
Do you remember what was whispered, or if it was distinguishable?
No, I do. And
you don't have to share it if it's too personal, or if it was, kill the following people. And I'm never going to do it.
So no. I'm a Christian, so I believe in angels and I believe in God and Christ. And the message was a very personal message. And I felt like, honestly, I feel like you could have been an angel because of what it told me. And it was something that at the time I was going through kind of not a crisis of faith, but I had a lot of questions, and I'd been in a lot of prayer, and I was kind of in seeker mode, where I was just looking for answers. And the message that I got was, very, it was dead center. It landed right where I needed it to, so to speak. So it was kind of like an answer to prayer in a way. And it was audible, and I could feel it. So it was personal, and I won't share what it was, but it was well timed, and I feel like it came straight from upstairs, man. It was really cool. Not scared. There was no fear or anything like that. There was no feeling of the air going cold. No doors shutting or anything like that. It was just a soft whisper, a comforting whisper. It was a female voice, and I don't know. It was just what I needed to hear at the time. I just wasn't expecting to hear it from, someone else in the room that I couldn't see, I guess you could say. So, but that's all.
How about Robert, speaks in mysterious ways. That's nice and direct. If it could always be that way, how easy? How much simpler life would be? What if we could get like a daily email? Hey, here's a message from God. Today we need you to focus on the following things. Great. No ambiguity. That's what I need right there. Thank
you. I'd sign up for that email list in a heartbeat. Are you kidding me? I'm in.
I'm going to do rapid fire here because I know that that clock's ticking. Sure. But you are pretty upfront about your faith in some of your videos on YouTube. Do you intend to write some non-secular novels as well as secular, or are you trying to keep is there a separation between your faith and your author persona and what you're doing with your fiction? Or, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good question. I plan on writing, well, the middle grade fantasy series is, you could say it's secular. It has some good themes in it, good principles, character themes. The paranormal urban fantasy was, I wouldn't say it was secular. I would say it was non-secular. The message overall being, one of faith. So I'm going to do both in the future, depending on, where the spirit leads, what passion project I'm in the middle of. And I have this year, Lord willing, I'm going to try my hand at an adult novel, full-length adult novel, and it's going to have some Christian themes in it, but it's going to be a secular book. So there might be a dirty word here or there. I really don't like that. I really would prefer to just, even for an adult novel, just write clean. But I think you can talk about more adult themes in an adult novel. It can be secular, but you can still have some positive character building, heartwarming, encouraging things that correlate with what I believe, correlate with my faith, that I could share with other people, without it being a technically, Zondervan published Christian fiction. It doesn't have to be. It doesn't have, you don't have to go down that route. I know that wasn't a rapid fire answer, so my
No,
apologies.
you're good.
But I'm gonna do both. I'm gonna do both because I don't want to put anything out there that is dirty. I don't want to put anything out there that makes the reader put the book down and not feel just a little bit better about themselves or have a little more hope. I just, I don't have time for that, and because of my faith, I feel like someday I'm gonna have to. God gave me this passion, and I'm gonna have to give an account for it at some point. And just want to use it wisely,
So, okay. Well, then in that circumstance, two more rapid fire questions. We'll think about calling it a night. And this one's not even that rapid fire, because I've already put too much preamble. It's just not rapid fire. It's good. But let's
Great, man. I love it.
suppose that you get to the end of your life. You're there on Judgment Day, and God's sitting down and saying, "I don't know about this over here. What were you doing that day? But oh, this is pretty good, and I like what you did with your book." And you find out that you didn't, you never supported yourself solely from your writing. It didn't, you didn't have J.K. Rowling's success. But your books reached the readers that it most needed to reach and fulfilled God's higher purpose for that reader. And they took something that enriched their life and maybe made a difference for them. Would that be as satisfying?
Yes, it would. Yes, it would. Yeah, of course I want to do the writing full time, but that might not be why, I feel like God gave me this passion. It might not be the purpose behind all of it. I'm going to pursue that. I'm going to take it as far as I can take it. But so long as it has a positive impact, that has to be the most important thing. It really does. So yeah, I would be satisfied. And again, not a rapid fire answer, but a lot of those books that I have written in middle grade, my kids helped me come up with a lot of the ideas and characters, and it was a fun thing to do as a family that has been, I won't say immortalized, that's not the right word, but it's something that I'll be able to leave behind, a legacy, something they can remember enjoying doing with me. And they could pass down to their kids and say, "Your grandpa wrote these books. You should read these books," So it'll feel good to leave something like that behind that we did together as a family.
I love that answer. You know what? I think that's. I should ask you about. You know what? I will ask you about advice for writers, and we'll call it a night. My
Okay.
last question is always some variations. That was a pretty good ending note. So maybe I'll go back and I'll edit this out, and we'll just end there. That was pretty good. But I always ask if you could go back to 2018 or as early as you want and give yourself some advice about writing, about publishing that would have made your path easier and might help everyone listening. What would you go back and tell yourself?
Yeah, be patient with yourself and be patient with the process. Just give yourself time to learn. Give yourself time to make mistakes and fix them. Just be patient with yourself. I thought things would move faster than they did, whether it's the writing and publishing, or whether it's building up your monthly royalties. Just be patient. It's gonna take longer than you think. It's gonna take longer than you think. I wish I had known that, because back in November of 2018, when I published it, I started getting some sales. I'm like, dude, in 4 months I can be full time. I didn't know. And that didn't happen. And of course, November and December were great months for sales. And I'm thinking, wow, if I keep up this trend, I'll be sitting pretty in about a year. And then January and February roll along, and you're like, what happened? I didn't understand that it's a slow build. You add books, and you get better as a writer. You learn from the feedback. So, and learning how to upload things to KDP and, get the cover file just right, and all those frustrating little things. I think they're frustrating if you're in a hurry. But if you're not in a hurry and you give yourself the permission to be patient and learn and take as long as you need until it's right, I think I would have been happier through the process if I had just been a little more patient with myself.
There we go. That's the note, Dent. Tell the kids you came on Middle Grade Ninja and you crushed it. It went as great as it possibly could have.
It's so impressive how many guests you have lined up in advance of actually recording, you know, the episodes. And I'm sure people are emailing all the time or trying to contact you all the time about being on your show. And have you ever gotten to a place where there were no inquiries and you had to go find people? I'm sure you reach out to certain people that you'd love to have on the show, but at the same time, I'm sure you're getting a ton of requests to be on the show like mine. Has there ever been a moment where you didn't have anybody lined up and you weren't getting responses from people you were inviting? You're like, oh no, what am I going to do for the next episode?
Very early on. I mean, like anything, I've always figured my philosophy is a imperfect something is better than a perfect nothing.
Yeah.
Get going.
Yeah.
And figure it out as I go. Like, I don't bore the guests to tears by spending 2 to 3 minutes talking about my books and where to buy them before we start the interview. I just record that before time. I made Hugh Howey sit and listen to me talk about my books for 2.5 minutes before we started. I go, what the hell's wrong with me? Anyway. just learn and you stop doing that.
Yeah.
No, what I was going to say, as far as the show goes, no, because when I first started it, it was live. So those early episodes are something else. What I figured out was I was putting it up just as soon as I had them. So I'd have a week where I had 3 episodes hit. And before the first one, it really gained enough traffic, you know, it'd be knocked out of place by the next two. And so I just kept recording at about the same pace and just started holding them and said, okay, well, every Saturday you get an episode and that's it. And so far it's working. And if I miss a week or it just doesn't happen, well, it's a free show, man.
Yeah.
The archives get more of the,
right.
the traffic. Right. You get what you're paid for. It's fine. I do. Obviously, you want to be consistent with content. And I want to keep YouTube's algorithm building up. Because that's what's frustrating me is iTunes and Spotify went like immediately. The websites have, you know, that's over a decade. That I've been doing that now. So that's the traffic's there. It's just YouTube's bugging me. It's like, you know, I think 200 and some odd subscribers at the moment, trending toward 300. But like, oh, come on, man. Not because I'm so awesome, but have you seen the guests that have been on this show? Where are
yeah.
the YouTube?
Yeah.
So that drives me a little bit nuts. But all that to say that, yeah, no, I just learned through trial and error that, making sure that every week it's better to be consistent than to have a whole lot of great content followed by a month of nothing where the algorithms just drop off completely.
Yeah. That was the other frustrating thing about COVID is that I was on this every week, upload a video to YouTube, and then, you know, 4 weeks of nothing, like kind of a reset. Not that the algorithm has picked up anything that I've done. I don't think it has at all. But that's really frustrating when you have a frequency. You have a rhythm and then you stop and you know that the algorithm's dependent on, you know, consistency. So I need to get back on the get the train back on the rails and do it. So how long has your show been going? When did you first started? When was episode one?
I'd have to look. Like 3 years ago, I think. And there was a huge, like, there was some, like, 4 or 5 months between episode one and episode two, because episode one was just my homie from Laura Martin from my critique group. I was like, hey, you want to do a thing for your book and see what happens? So, yeah. And I was terrified, but, you know, she's such a fantastic presenter that she, you know, she carried the show. And I was like, whoa, I sound amazing because I just let her talk.
I love it.
That was, let's see here, what was the date on that? That was June 6th of 2018, so about the same time you were getting started.
Okay, man, awesome. That is awesome.
Nice and slow and steady. But I got lucky right. No, not lucky. That's the wrong word, because I have been running the site for, you know, a decade this year. So I had enough credibility from all the authors and literary agents I'd featured there that I put the Middle Grade Ninja name. I'm not starting from nothing.
Right.
But like episode 4 or episode 5, I had Mary Cole on here, which is crazy. That should be like episode 70 or episode 80 when you really built up to it. And just right away, there's Mary Cole. And then my friend Susan K. Quinn shows up. You know, Jeff Norton, Darby Carshoot, just everybody in that top 10 just right away. Like John Cusick, literary agent John Cusick, should have been episode 200, episode 9. So I just got lucky right out of the gate.
Yeah. Man, that's phenomenal.
And it's a tremendous leap of faith on their part, because there was no reason to think I knew what I was doing, nor have I demonstrated that, I think, since. So I'm amazed that people continue to show up. I joke with my wife that the show's over when people just get tired of it. And, all right, well, it was a good run. We had fun. That'll be it.
Oh, man. Well, you've done a phenomenal job and built up a great podcast and a great following. You've got awesome, awesome guests. And I am absolutely thrilled that you were open to having me on. So thank you. And it being my first experience doing this, someone said, you should see if you could get on a podcast that you listen to. And I said, well, couldn't hurt to ask. Might as well ask. And man, thank you for the opportunity.
Where can esteemed audience find you online, track you down, buy your books, all that good stuff?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So all the books are on Amazon. Under my author name, Nick Goss. You can find me on Facebook. Our Facebook page is Travelers League. Just type in Travelers League in Facebook. Also, that's the name of our YouTube page, YouTube channel. And so I would say those are the three big ones. If you go to the Facebook page and you want to sign up for the email list, you will get book one of the series for free in exchange for your email. And I typically keep up with my email list maybe 2 times a month. Once for sure, maybe 2 times. I don't like to overdo it. You know, I update them about new videos, book promotions, free things, just whatever I can send them that I feel like might add value to them. So those would be the three main places.
As always, esteemed audience, head to middlegradeninja.com. Read thousands of interviews with editors, literary agents, publishing professionals and authors, folks I know you would love. You're going to have a good time. Download your free copy of Banneker Bones and the Giant Robot Bees. And God willing, I'm alive. I'll see you next week.